Joan Hamburg, and welcome to Let Me Tell You, our original podcast, part of the OG Podcast Network. And you can, obviously, you know about it because you've arrived here. But tell your friends, we have a lot of listeners, and we love having you as part of our show. On this show, we usually do a lot of Jones Week information, how you get theater tickets, where you should eat, what's going on. But recently, we had a good time. We did a terrific show with a live audience right from a popular West Side restaurant, Cheska Restaurant, in the West 70s. Excellent food and a terrific place to go to. So, as part of this show, we had Rita Rudner, who's incredibly funny, who's starring in a show that she and her husband wrote on the theater, an excellent theater, 59 East 59th Street. And you are going to enjoy this show. You're going to enjoy Rita Rudner. Also with Rita is the one and only Michael Feinstein, who is responsible for making us all care about the Great American Songbook. And Michael plays and talks and is charming and funny. I must say myself, it's a terrific show. And I hope you enjoy it. So settle down, relax, because straight ahead, our live entertainment show. By the way, we do these shows during the course of the year. We're going to be hopefully doing another one right near the holidays. So stay tuned and listen. Have fun. You're listening to Let Me Tell You. Welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show. We're broadcasting today from Cheska Restaurant, 164 West 75th Street. And I want you to meet Rita Rudner. And Rita is starring in her own play. She and her husband collaborated, Two's a Crowd, at 59 East 59th Street through August 25th. And Rita brought her entire family here. She, her husband, her daughter is working on this play. And you started, actually, you were a Broadway baby.
I was. And you know what's so amazing? You know everything.
Not everything.
Yes. Isn't Joan like a human Siri? Yes. Yes. Right. If you need to know something, you just ask Joan. You know where everything is and what to do with it.
I said, it's the wrong me. I always claim, while other women love jewels, I loved information.
Well, you still have nice jewels, too. You can have both. Let's have both, okay? Let's not limit ourselves.
You can try to have both. But you have, we're going to talk about the play because it's the most unlikely story of two people through a computer glitch, which is something we're all familiar with.
Oh, yes.
They're in Vegas, and they end up, they didn't know each other, they're totally opposite, having to share a hotel room, which they both booked.
They both booked their computer era. And what it's been described as, and I love this description, is a rom-com for people over 50. Because that's something that doesn't exist in this world. And we are here, and we are fun, and we want to have a good time. And it's something, it's also been described as a sitcom with songs, because it's got lots of jokes. And I get to talk to the audience, because that's what I do in my stand-up anyway. So we put that in. And it's been selling really, really well. And what I like is everyone leaves happy. There's no politics. It's all about human relationships. And it's about a very uptight woman called Wendy Solomon, who says she's 59, And she kind of waffles on that a little bit later. But it's at 59 East 59th. I'm 59 Wendy. And
that's a good age. I like it.
Don't you like that?
I
it's
may
like
borrow
Jack,
it.
That's like Jack Benny's 39, but I'm 59. And the theater is called 59 East 59th. So you really can't forget it. And it's a great name for a theater unless it's on 64th Street. So I want you all to come see it because I know you'll all really like it. And I did start out as a dancer on Broadway 7 million years ago. And the reason we're doing it here this summer is a lovely woman called Val Day saw our production of it in California. And she asked us to come here. And it was the summer. And I could bring my daughter. And she's working backstage, and she does all the quick changes.
What a thrill.
Because, and also, Martin and I, we wrote it together. And people say, how do you work with your husband? And I say, it's better he works with me than with a young blonde woman.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Who does not say she's 59.
No, she's 18.
No, but you got yourself a good one. And, you know, Rita was very unusual. Unfortunately, she lost her mom very young.
This is true. Joan knows everything, I told you.
No, but, and your daddy remarried.
Yes,
and
he didn't, and she didn't like me.
Well.
But she wanted to do her own thing. So you know what I did? I left.
And you were just a kid.
I was 15. And I said, you know what? There's someplace else. And I decided to be a dancer on Broadway. And by the time I just turned 16, I got in a national tour called Absorba. And 17, I was in Promises. 18, I was in Follies. And I was on Broadway for 10 years. And I said, oh, my feet hurt. I'm going to learn to talk. So that's what I did. I was a late talker. I was 27.
Rita Runda, starring in her own show. But you did something that I really admire. Here's this young girl, came to New York, made it, got hired. Who does that? And then you said, I've got to find the missing link. Every young woman in America wants to be a Broadway star. No one wants to do stand-up.
No, there
How
were
many
only
women
two.
Then?
I only knew two. I knew Phyllis Diller and I knew Joan Rivers. And I knew I'd go to these auditions on Broadway. And I was doing well. I had my own part in Annie. I was Lily St. Regis, named after the hotel. And I was doing fine and everything was going well. But it was so competitive. And I can sing. I sing in this show, too. But I'm not a really good singer. And I would listen to these people audition for Broadway shows. And they were fantastic. I said, I can't do that. And at 27, you don't get to be a better dancer as you get older. Let's face it. So things start to fall apart. I said, you know, I better learn how to do something else. And I didn't want to be an actress. I didn't want to take my clothes off. I love my clothes. In fact, if you could put more clothes on me right now, I would wear them.
Wait, didn't you write a book about being naked underneath
I
your
did.
Clothes?
I did. I said, I am naked beneath my clothes. That was the name of my first book. So I said, where is there an avenue that I don't have to be, you know,
naked.
I don't have to be naked. I don't have to sing. And it was comedy. And then I started hanging out in these comedy clubs. And I love comedy. And I still do it all the time. I did it on Monday night in Long Island in a big theater and on my day off because it's really fun. And that's what I would love for my daughter. I don't know what she's going to do, but I love to go to work every day, and I think that's such a huge part of life. Don't
well,
you, Joan? Don't
I
you
do.
Love to go to work?
I do.
If you can love to go to work, you're going to have a happy life.
We're workaholics, but you also said when you were starting in comedy, I can learn this. So you, who studies comedy?
I made up a comedy school by myself. Because I was a dancer, so every day I went to ballet class, I went to tap, I went to jazz, I went to acrobatics. I learned all those things. So I said, well, why can't you learn comedy? So I started listening to Woody Allen, and I said, oh, okay, I see two thoughts coming together here, and that makes a joke. And then I started listening to Jack Benny, because my mom loved Jack Benny, and I loved the Jack Benny show, and I remembered that. And I went to the Museum of Broadcasting every day, and I looked at old comedy shows with George and Gracie.
Listen to the
and
timing.
Fred Allen. Yes, and all those. And then I got albums, because you remember records from the Lincoln Center Library. And then, because I lived in New York, there were all these film festivals. And I discovered Jacques Tati film festivals and Preston Sturges and Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. And every day I said, I have to get some more knowledge about comedy. And then I would sit in comedy clubs all night. But I'm an obsessive. So I think you have to. I was obsessive about dance and then about comedy. And that's how I did it. And I still love it. And I get so excited when I think of a joke.
But, and you are such a chance taker. When you came here at 15, 16, How did you even know where to live?
I had been here the year before, the summer before, after my mom died. I came with my best friend, who's still my best friend, who lives on Central Park West, and she's come to the show already a few times, and I had lunch with her yesterday, and we've been friends since we were eight, and we started in ballet class together, and she and her mother came for the summer. And I needed to get away from home because my
dad...
The
stepmother.
Well, he wasn't there. She wasn't there yet, but it was just such a bad place. So I said, how am I going to be a dancer on Broadway in Miami? I have to be in New York. So I went and I took all the subways with my friend Charlene, and I learned how to do all the ballet classes and the dance classes. So when I got here the next summer, and that summer I got a telegram, because they did telegrams at that point. I'm talking about like the 1840s
right.
here.
And, but people did send Western Union.
Yeah, I got a telegram from my dad. I just got married. And I hadn't even, I didn't know who, I'd never met her. And he, I just got married? So I go, oh God, I got to go home to this. So
that was tough.
Yeah, and I came home and there was this big woman in my house.
Wait, a big woman?
Yeah,
or?
She was like 6'1". I said, oh my God, what is happening here?
Where did he find her?
He found her. He didn't go far out of his way. He was a lawyer and she was a court reporter.
That was easy.
He didn't, if something wasn't across the street, he didn't go there. So he said, come over here. And then that's what happened.
So that was good because it pushed you out.
You know, you can make good things and bad things. My daughter is 17, and if she would have told me she was leaving home at 15, I would have had there's no way. You know, I would have said, this isn't happening. But it was a different time. It was different circumstances. I'm a very good mother. So I think she's going to be with me. I want her to stay in her room for the rest of her life. I know that's not going to happen, but
no,
that's what I would like to have happen.
We understand that. Yes. I wish my kids would live with me.
Me
now.
Too. I never want her to leave.
I know. Well, like, what happened? Why did they move out?
Don't do that. No, I just want her there. But anyway, it's going to happen. But I'm gonna have to learn how to cope because every one of my days is centered around her. But my friend Cindy said, Rita, college is only 4 years, and then they come home and they live with you for the rest of their lives.
That's the new reality.
So I'm hoping that's what happens. I got her room already.
I understand. But when you started doing stand-up, because believe it or not, I remember seeing you on the David Letterman show.
That was one of my very, very first shows, yes.
And no one could get on David Letterman.
That was I had to audition a few times because the first time the talent booker came to Catch a Rising Star, it was a rainy Tuesday. And I don't know if you know this, but, you know, because I do all this research and I've been doing comedy my whole life, it's very difficult for people to laugh when they're damp. So it was a very damp night, and the whole place smelled musty, and everyone didn't bring an umbrella. So the first audition didn't go well, but the talent booker said, you know, I liked your material. I'm going to come back and listen to you again. And then the next night, it was better weather, and I got on the David Letterman show at 12:25.
That's okay.
And I was so excited. And I said, I did it. I thought of things that were funny for 5 minutes, and I said them, and everybody laughed. And then my doorman the next day, Caesar, said, when are you going to be on again? And I went, oh my gosh, I only have 5 minutes. And I already did them on TV. I've got to go back to work. So I just got my notebook out and started writing again.
And then more things happened. An Englishman came into your life.
Well, I said, that's another reason I did stand-up. I said I was meeting a lot of men on Broadway, but not men I was necessarily going to get married to.
Because they didn't want to marry you.
Well,
they wanted to marry your brother.
Yes, that could be. Yes, Joan. See, Joan knows everything. And I said, what do I like? I like funny men. Where am I going to find funny men? Comedy clubs. So I started going, and that's another reason I did comedy, but I know comedians. So this one very nice English gentleman wandered in one night who was producing comedy shows to go to the Edinburgh Festival in Edinburgh. I guess that's why they call it the Edinburgh Festival. And he hired me to do New York stand-up comedy, and it was a big success, and we didn't date because I had a bad boyfriend, he had a bad girlfriend, and it was a couple years, and he moved to Australia to get away from his mother, and we, because he did, it was, that's
right.
Another show, Joan, oh my gosh, but anyway.
What was wrong with his mother?
I don't know, you got to ask, well, she's got arthritis, and she doesn't want to take painkillers, so she's cranky, and She's a little cranky. And so he hired me. We were friends for a couple of years. And then about 2 years later, I went to Australia. And he had broken up with his girlfriend. I broke up with my boyfriend. We got together, and we've been married for 31 years.
Unbelievable. And then they went to Vegas, and you were the longest-running act in Vegas.
Well, people say, why do you go to Vegas? And you want to hear something? Well, because it was the only place a comedian could have a normal life. Isn't that weird? Because I took a car to my show every night, and the audience took a plane. And we had a daughter, and I didn't want to be on the road anymore. And because I was in Vegas for 13 years, I was there for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and I was a total mother, and I could do my act. And we don't gamble, and we saved a lot of money, and now we have a beach house.
Right, which is in one of my favorite places, Laguna.
Yeah.
I love Laguna.
Yeah.
But you had once said that in L.A., you were considered to be an old hag. You know, L.A., Never Neverland. Right? But in Vegas, you were a queen.
I was a spring chicken. In, you know, in if you're over 40 in L.A., forget it. But when I went to Las Vegas, we noticed that compared to Siegfried and Roy and Wayne Newton, I was sprightly. So good. I think timing is very important. And Martin is very, my husband Martin is very good at looking at things and seeing, you know, what could be. And he said, you know what's not here? People who are currently on television. So I was able to work there for 13 years, having my own show and my own theater, which was really nice.
Fantastic.
And I could raise my little girl perfectly because, again, I'm perfect. Wait till
not?
I have a glass of wine. I'll be less perfect.
And now Rita's got a show that she did with her husband called Choose a Crowd at 59 East 59 through August 25th. Guys, she's fabulous. It's fabulous. You can relate to it. Is there anything else on that bucket list of yours?
I don't even have a bucket. Yeah. I do everything I want to do right now. And what I really want to do is I want to do a good show tonight. I don't think very far in the future. My friend said, Rita, because she came from Connecticut, and she said, why didn't you tell me you were coming to Connecticut in October? And I said, because I didn't know. So I just know what I'm doing tonight. I'm going to sing. I'm going to dance. I'm going to be as funny as I can on stage. And then I'm going to go to bed. And after this, I'm going to go wash my hair because I'm a little sweaty because I walked from East 57th Street.
That was pretty good. Rita Rudner. Thank you, Rita.
Oh, you're so wonderful. And Joan is wonderful. And congratulations on all your success.
On everyone. We're so happy you're here. We're celebrating all good things at Cheska Restaurant. We all love to eat a little drink. We usually don't give you booze, but special day today. Let's take a break. And then writer Susan Isaacs.
Ooh.
You know, really interesting.
Ooh.
The housewife from Great Neck, who made it big time.
Yes, I love
movies,
Susan.
Television.
I love Susan Isaacs.
I know, she's great. And she's got a new mystery, a new thriller out. So
I'm going to read it immediately.
And Michael Feinstein is coming over.
Oh, you know what? Wait one second. I'm working with Michael Feinstein for
the first
time on a double bill in Naples. We're going to be together because I played his club here and in San Francisco. And I'm so excited to be working with him.
So he's coming. So hang out. Stay tuned, everyone. Welcome.
I'm so excited.
It's the Joan Hamburg Show.
I love to hear somebody play on a piano, a grand piano.
Welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show on location at Cheska Restaurant in the West 70s. Shall I tell you that I have known Michael Feinstein since he was a wee boy? And now Michael is like, look around, Feinstein's. This man is unbelievable. By the way, he's performing at 54 Below. Feinstein's 54 Below. I Happen to Like New York is the name of his show. Among his guests is a woman. If you've never watched her work, she is one of the incredible people, Marilyn May. You got to see her. I mean, when she entertains even out of town, I have friends who literally charter planes to go and follow her. But the Michael story is really unique. He was just a kid, and from the time he was a little boy, he knew what he wanted to do. And, of course, as a big boy, he's played at the White House, he's sung Buckingham Palace, Carnegie Hall, he's had Grammys, Emmys. But something interesting happened to him. When he was 20 years old, he said to his parents, "This is what I am, this is what I'm doing, I want to move to L.A. Most of us wanted them to move in with us. So your parents gave you their blessing, right? They said, go.
They couldn't stop me.
I know, but, you know, they understood.
They did. My parents were quite amazing. My mother is still alive. She's 91. And they supported me in whatever I wanted to do. I started playing music right out of high school, and they said, that's great. I was playing in piano bars and nightclubs and in Columbus, Ohio, and they said, whatever makes you happy. And I didn't realize till later how extraordinary that was,
right.
Especially for Jewish parents.
Exactly. And for their child to be a musician, you know, of some sort.
Yes.
Not a lawyer, doctor, accountant.
No, I was working for tips. You know, I learned the bigger the tip glass, you know, you get more tips because it looked like there was less money in it. I learned all the tricks, you know, to get money. That tips were the big thing.
That is so funny. But when you went to L.A., you once told me that it was Oscar Levant, a name everyone knows, his widow, is that a true story, introduced you to the Gershwins?
Yes, June Levant, Oscar's widow. Oscar Levant was famous for saying things like Elizabeth Taylor ought to get a divorce and settle down. And he said that he knew Doris Day before she became a virgin. But yes, I met June Levant because I was a fan of Oscar Levant's, and she introduced me to the Gershwin family, and I spent 6 years working for Ira, and in that time I met all of his contemporaries who were still with us. I met Leonard Bernstein and Andre Castellanets and Comden and Green and Lauren Bacall and Burton Lane and Harry Warren, and so I got to meet all these people who were legends to me. They were so important, and I was so lucky because they were the people I wanted to meet. You know, everybody else wanted to meet the big stars. I wanted to meet the songwriters.
And you told me that at one point you were in the house, in the Gershwin home, and they opened a secret door, or at least it was a door you didn't know about, and there was a wealth of songs and material and things that almost blew you out.
Yes, they had a sort of a sequestered door, and inside it was like Aladdin's cave. I've described it as that because it was a collection of rare radio recordings of George Gershwin and manuscripts and letters and papers and ephemera. And there was an old phone book, and the old phone book had phone numbers of all these people who had passed. You know, I looked there, I thought, gee, I could call Judy Garland, you know. Look at these numbers, like, there's her phone number, you know. But it was quite something.
So after all those years, had your head changed at all about what you wanted to do? Did you still know that it was you were going to perform, you were going to write, you were... What happened?
During the time I worked for Ira, I eventually became his assistant, and then he named me in his will as his executor.
Wow.
And I had planned to would devote my life to taking care of his literary properties and working for the Gershwin estate, the Ira Gershwin estate. And then after he died, he and his wife and I, Leonor, had a falling out. Later we made up, but so I left that world, and I started playing in piano bars again. And I was bereft because I thought...
This was going to be the future.
Yeah, I wasn't planning on being a performer. I was going to be an archivist and work on the estate. So I became a performer again sort of by default because there wasn't anything else I knew how to do. And then eventually I got offers to play a club in San Francisco, then the Algonquin in New York. They booked me, and that was sort of the sea change.
Was that like the big turning point when you played
yes.
there?
Yes. 1986, the Algonquin, and then I got an offer to play Broadway, and then I played the Hollywood Bowl. 17,000 people. That was a year after
for this
that.
Young kid.
Yeah, yeah. It was unbelievable. It was.
I remember I was doing a show with Arlene Francis. You all, many of you may know.
I loved her.
At that time. And she said, I was in L.A. and I met this guy who is so extraordinary. And it was you. And I remember you coming over to Sardi's.
Yes.
And playing that awful Sardi's piano.
It was better than the food.
The food's gotten a little better.
The food is good now, I can say that. So.
The food's gotten better. Yeah. Did you tell me that, was it Ira who was the hypochondriac? Because there was so much music, the Gershwins could have done more.
Well, Ira wasn't exactly a hypochondriac, but he was. George was this firecracker. George Gershwin, who died in 1937 at the age of 38, was the guy who was constantly working, and Ira was methodical and slow with lyrics. So George would finish a tune right away, then it would take Ira sometimes weeks to come up with an idea because he had to go through his process. And so it just took him a long time.
But it all worked in the end. And then your life, as you said, after the Algonquin, started happening more and more and more.
Yes, it was amazing because I was just a kid who played in piano bars, so I didn't expect to ever leave playing small venues. But at that moment, I guess it was a novelty that I was playing these classic songs, and it was the right moment because there was a revival of interest in the songwriters, and so suddenly I was doing what I had dreamt of wanting to do, of doing concerts of Gershwin and Cole Porter and Berlin and Rodgers and Hart with symphonies and television and all that. It just sort of came naturally. And then records, so It's been a fabulous blessing. Yeah,
and
I'm still doing it.
Why not? Michael Feinstein at 54 Below through August 23rd, and the tickets are great. They're well priced. You've got to go here, Michael, because it isn't that often, right? I mean, you're traveling all over the place.
Yeah, I'm all over. I'm going to Australia this fall, and I play Feinstein's 54 twice a year. Do short runs, usually do August, and I'll do something at as my grandmother would say, holiday time.
Did she appreciate her boy,
Oy.
Grandma? Oy.
You have no
Did
idea.
Did she get it?
Oh boy, did she get it? Yeah, yeah. Both of them did. Yeah. She'd call me up and she'd say, why aren't you on the Merv Griffin show? I keep waiting for you to be on the Merv Griffin show. Finally, I was on the Merv Griffin show and she was happy.
No, but we all have our little standards.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
What we want for our boys, right?
Absolutely.
Michael agreed. We brought in a keyboard. This is not a Steinway. This is an ABC keyboard. It's older than I am.
It's got about 25 keys. A keyboard usually has 88 keys. This has about, 40 keys?
So who's counting?
I am.
But Michael is the best sport. And with our producer holding the microphone, she's our mic stand, Michael is going to play the short-ended keyboard here to give you a little taste, because I want to hear about the show.
All right.
Okay,
all right.
So play a little bit, and then we'll talk about the show.
Okay.
Before we let you go.
Okay,
the one and only Michael Feinstein at 54 Below, 234 West 54th Street. And this you're getting as part of your On Location package. Okay. Now, Jen is busy pulling the mic, which is definitely tied down to the table. We just didn't want anyone going home with the microphone. So, Michael, who needs a pedal?
It sounds like a harpsichord.
This is an adventure.
Oi, how do I make this sound like a piano? All right, okay, let's see. Okay, so all of you listening at home, this is probably the most torturous thing I've ever done. I just want sympathy for when it all goes wrong. Let's see here. I'm trying to make it sound like a piano. Oh, well. I like New York in June. How about you? I love a Gershwin tune. How about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. I like potato chips, moonlight, and motor trips. How about you? I'm mad about good books. Can't get my fill. And Audrey Hepburn's looks give me a thrill. Holding hands in a movie show when all the lights are low. May not be new, but I like it. How about you? I like it. How about you?
The one and only Michael Klemstein. I happen to like New York. And Michael, I owe you a keyboard without a pedal that doesn't know it's supposed to sound like a piano. To get tickets for the real thing.
I mean, after that, how can you resist, right?
54below.com/Michael.
/Michael, that's how I feel.
I know, you did great. So Marilyn May is going to be there with him, and Melissa Manchester.
Yeah, next week, Melissa's coming.
Oh, yeah, well, so many great things. Tell us what it's about.
Well, it's about 75 minutes.
Because you're such a great sport.
Well, it's called I Happen to Like New York because it's a tribute, of course, to this great city and also to the great music that has been inspired by New York. And I actually originally called the show I Happen to Like Toledo, but we didn't sell any tickets. But the songs are still all about Toledo. No, I'm just kidding. But the continuum of what I do, what we do in nightclubs, and nightclubs are kind of a rarefied air these days. And so it's a tribute to the works of Bobby Short, of Portia Nelson, of Sylvia Sims, of Charlie DeForest, of Margaret Whiting, of all the greats who were creating songs that became world famous. You know, you'd hear people do songs in nightclubs. Bobby Short would pick up an obscure Cole Porter song called From This Moment On, and it would become a standard and would be used in the MGM film Kiss Me, Kate. You know, or songs like Fly Me to the Moon, or all these songs were nightclub numbers that everybody would pluck and do records of, and they'd become standards. So New York, musically, is the genesis of the essence of the great American songbook, and that's what the show's about.
Which we learned from you. The truth is, if you had said to someone, we're going to do stuff from the great American songbook, they would have looked at you like you're crazy.
Yes.
You really made that happen.
Well, as I said, it was not only the right time, thank you, Mom, but it was rediscovering the wit, the lyrics, you know, these words, these melodies, they are absolutely timeless. And when you have a lyric like Yip Harburg, poor you, I'm sorry you're not me, for you will never know what loving you can be. When it is you I'm kissing, I pity you constantly. You don't know what you're missing, 'cause you're only kissing poor me. I mean, those kinds of ideas are just such eloquent expressions of romance. Mm.
So great. Michael Feinstein. And Michael isn't here that often. So, yeah, I can't believe you love L.A.
I do love L.A. It's true. It's true.
What?
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 What? What? What? Well, I like the climate. I love having space. I like the greenery. And also, when I moved there, I met all these amazing people. Yeah. You know, I met Rosemary Clooney. I met Ira Gershwin. I was Sammy Kahn.
It changed your life.
Yeah, and my friends are still there. So many of my friends are there. So it's a good
life.
That's
our guy. Do you go to the farmer's market on the weekends?
I go to the farmer's market, and I go to the flea market at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena.
Mm. I did that, too. That was so
much. Oh, it's the greatest.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's like the world's best yard sale.
It's unbelievable. You can find practically anything there.
You do. You always had great taste, though.
Thank you.
You're still doing it? You're still, like, decorating and designing and making stuff look great?
Yeah, actually, my husband Terrence does most of that, but I collect records and sheet music and ephemera, and you can find amazing stuff there. I just found, I'm conducting an orchestra, the Pasadena Pops. I do a whole summer season, and this is my seventh year. And September 14th, we're doing a salute to MGM, and I found the original orchestration of Over the Rainbow from the movie The Wizard of Oz. And that all of the MGM music was thrown away in the 1960s. They threw away all the orchestrations. And this turned up by total happenstance. If the music had been returned to MGM, it would have been destroyed in the 60s with the rest. So for the first time in 80 years, we're going to be playing the original movie arrangement that Judy Garland sang in The
That's
Wizard of
fantastic.
Oz.
Fantastic.
So I can do stuff like that with stuff that
it's
that
fantastic.
Turns up in L.A. So.
Go see and hear more at 54below.com/Feinsteins until the 23rd of August. Thank you, Michael. I owe you big time.
Oh, no. You're
Next
you're
time
my special
a Steinway.